In 1990, when Mexico first brought up the idea of a free trade agreement, its economy was just 4% the size of the U.S. economy. So it was kind of like a little kid asking a much bigger kid to play a game, but without any adjustments to level the playing field. No tea in baseball, for example. No head start for the little guy. Why would Mexico do this?
In the 1980s, Mexico had a very deep crisis, not very dissimilar to the crisis Greece or Spain are going through right now.
This is Luis de la Calle, one of Mexico's chief negotiators in the trade talks with the U.S.
In a way, the NAFTA is the child of the 1980 crisis.
Financial experts are calling it the worst monetary crisis to hit Mexico since the revolution of 1910. The dollar that was worth 45 pesos is suddenly worth about 70 pesos.
This is from a TV news broadcast in August of 1982. Mexico owed money, a lot of money, to private banks and to other countries. How to get out of this, Mexican officials wondered. The answer they finally came up with was to completely restructure their economy. Here's economic sociologist Kathleen Schwartzman.
Mexico needed to export, and as a condition of that, it had to begin liberalizing the economy.
Meaning it had to open the country up to more foreign investment and trade.
This is my colleague, Jill Replogle.
That's not what Mexico had been doing. For a half century, it was all about protecting Mexican industries and Mexican farmers. Now it wanted to do business with the rest of the world. A free trade agreement promised more investment and jobs, manufacturing goods to sell abroad. Meanwhile, Mexican shoppers would find cheaper foreign goods in their supermarket aisles.
Originally, Mexico had actually hoped for a completely different part of the world to become its number one trading partner. In explaining this, NAFTA negotiator De La Calle referenced the famous saying, "Poor Mexico, so close to the U.S., so far away from God."
Which is another way of saying, so close to the U.S. and so far away from Europe.
But Europe was busy. Hear that? That's the sound of the Berlin Wall being chipped away, opening up a big Eastern European market for Western European products and investment.
Which left the U.S. as the next best option.
Mexico was, in a way, very lucky because a bunch of Texans were running the U.S. government.
The Secretary of Commerce, the Secretary of State, President Bush Sr., all Texans. And Texans have a long history of doing business with Mexico. Plus, free trade was trending. 123 countries were in the process of forming the World Trade Organization. And the U.S., starting first with Canada and then with Mexico, wanted to sell its goods to everyone in the Western Hemisphere. For the U.S., it would stem the tide of Mexicans coming across the border to look for work. It would ensure that the U.S. remained a superpower in a globalizing world. Carla Hills was the U.S. trade representative at the time.
It was the most far-reaching agreement that anyone on the face of the globe had negotiated up to that time.
Still, some groups opposed NAFTA vigorously. American labor was worried U.S. manufacturers would move their operations and jobs south of the border, where labor was cheaper and environmental standards lower. Environmentalists worried about the same thing.
Meanwhile, Mexican manufacturers feared they wouldn't be able to compete. And farmers in southern Mexico prepared for an uprising to defend their corn and bean fields from American agribusiness. And critics on both sides of the border predicted fallout over one point in particular. NAFTA would allow money and goods to flow freely across the border, but not labor. Here's Carla Hills on why.
It would not have permitted the trade agreement to be negotiated had we had an immigration chapter.
Politicians from the U.S., Mexico, and Canada signed off on NAFTA in late 1992, creating the template for a free trade world. I'm Jill Replogle in San Diego.
And I'm Devin Brown.